Welcome to the Creative Entrepreneur Show. What do we have this week, Brian?
Hey, Rosh, happy to be here this week. I want to talk about the benefits of using Facebook groups and some of the ways to use them the right way. And then something here that might be a little bit relatable to us, better news than what we talked about a couple months ago, or I guess a few weeks back, but you've reeled in the big fish. Now what? What do you have going on?
Nice. I want to talk about something that sounds complex, but really is not, and that's competitive intelligence. And I'd like to talk about what happens. What do you do when no one agrees on the marketing strategy? Say you have a few people, you have a few directions you want to go, ideas. How do you get through that? How do you move forward? And then I have a little bit of information about our listeners. And that should be fun. I have a couple, where are they from? And what type of podcast do they ultimately like or listen to the most? Things like that. So anyway.
So to dive right in, one of the most important features to take advantage of on Facebook are groups. It's one of the reasons why Facebook has maintained its popularity. Mm-hmm. Honestly, groups and marketplace really have just kept Facebook afloat and kept it as the number one platform. If you're not utilizing Facebook groups as part of your entrepreneurial efforts, you're doing yourself a disservice on the socials. So with groups, it's really a great way to establish a community. Now, there's two different ways to go about it. You can either, as a person, your personal page, or as your business page, if the group allows it, you can join the right groups.
Right.
Or on the other end of it, you could start your own group, which can be really powerful if done the right way. Put yourself as in the position of, as the admin and coming as a position of authority as to whatever, your specific niche is. But look for the people that are going to be attracted to what your service is and create a group for these people to really cultivate the conversation of hopefully drive people towards your business. And so what's great about this is, first of all, groups are pretty much the king of organic reach on Facebook. I mean, you notice this the second you join a group, you open up Facebook every time your feed, it delivers you stuff from your groups pretty much even before your friends and family.
Right.
So it's really a way to stay right in front of people. I mean, I know the second I've joined a new group because every time I open Facebook, I'm immediately delivered a whole bunch of things from there. So it's really good for that. And most importantly, it's a place where you can really find your super fans. You can find the people that are going to represent your company, your brand. They'll do it, without pay. They'll, give you that endorsement that you'd be looking for from, you wouldn't know where to find these people otherwise. And you can get them in a place where all of a sudden their voice is public. It's really one of the best ways to go. And it's also one of the best bootstrap ways of, trying to create a buzz about your product or your art or your creative effort without really having to spend big money. I mean, I know our guest a few weeks back here, she said that's we mentioned doing BNI networking. And she's like, no, my networking is BNR is Facebook groups. Rosh, I'd love to hear, your thoughts are on this. I know you've been a thought leader in many different ways. What do you do in Facebook groups?
Oh, absolutely. Facebook groups is certainly one of the best ways to develop a community, as you put it, develop yourself as the expert within that community, but also an opportunity to reward the people who appreciate what you're doing, your creations, or you as a leader within that community, again, a thought leader of sorts within that community, but then building, closer relationships by showing that, look, you trust them. They're now also an admin within that group or a moderator within that group. And, ad groups or the Facebook groups have continuously evolved and allows you to you can develop courses within them. You can develop, educational models. You can develop rewards, all sorts of stuff that you can do to help that community. But it really is important to be active in that community. You have to keep it going. You need to respond to people. It's this opportunity, again, make people feel special and included when they're a part of that group, but you really do have to make that effort. So you have to be prepared. You can't just turn it on and walk away and hope it works out.
Well, and setting up the proper rules for moderation. You can't, you know, accept any and all comments. You got to be careful on that. And then some other technical things that are pretty cool about it is if you do have your own group going and you're over 250 members, I believe is the threshold, you get access to all sorts of really cool insights. You can learn about your audience and really dive deep there. So, I guess that leads hopefully into your next topic. I'm really excited to hear about what you have to say about competitive intelligence.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's not that big of a deal. What are your competitors doing? And sometimes there are some people, entrepreneurs, who are all obsessed about their competitors, and you really shouldn't be, in my opinion. You need to focus on your business. However, there are people who totally ignore their competitors or even think about it. They know there are other people within their niche or within their industry, but they don't think much about it. And so it's important to actually understand what they're doing, because you can fill some gaps with that information. And so that competitive intelligence means go through, if you can, if it's possible, the sales process with your competitor. Okay. You know, if it's something you can buy online and it's not going to break the bank, try buying it. And then compare to what you're doing and how easy was it to work with them compared to how easy is it to work with you. Marketing, what are they doing? You can use tools, especially in the digital world, like SEMrush will give you information in terms of what are they targeting? What kinds of audiences or types of ads are they running? That can be really helpful. So trying to figure out who their perfect customer is and why. It takes a little bit of effort. There are tools online that can help you to just dig in, and sometimes that competitive intelligence just straight up comes from looking at their website, taking the time, read what it is that they're saying, and obviously what they're focusing on. It'll become obvious. You know, maybe they kind of do what you do, but not really, because they're focused over here. Well, why are they focused over there? You know, ask those why questions as you go, one, through their materials, through their collateral, and through their process, and see how you can maybe apply some of the lessons or fill some holes that they're lacking in to better improve your position in the market. It sounds pretty corporate what I'm saying, but quite honestly, it's not that hard to do. And to just kind of get out of your own little box, your own little world, and just thinking in a different way. Again, sometimes your competitors can help you do that.
Yeah, I love that, because it really, what we're trying to do in giving advice in this show, is we're trying to give advice to all sorts of different personality types.
Yeah.
And what I really feel in that is sometimes in order to get something really done, sometimes you have to almost get a little bit jealous or a little bit angry, a little bit pissed off. And if you look at what your competition's doing and it's way better than you, or you know, it's different, or why didn't I think of it that way? Sometimes it can fuel that part of some people's personality and makes it so, hey, I want to really dive in deep and work till 2 a.m. and get something new done. And use that, whatever drives your personality to make you better. But that's, you know, the way I look at that is I like to look at the competition and look for what they're doing better. So then I can be jealous and fueled and want to do it better.
Sure. Absolutely. It takes time to grow a business, and any little advantage can help compound that and improve that timeline. If you can get it early and you just pay attention, Yeah. All right. What do you got next?
All right. So, the listeners of the show remember, I think about 5, 6, maybe 7 weeks back, we talked about what it's like to be in an agency and to lose a big client. And, moving on from that, and, you know, oftentimes there's always bright sides, and, you got to keep pushing hard. And, I believe in, when one door closes, another opens. And so I want to talk to the other side of this now is, you know, you've been working really hard and you've reeled in the big fish.
Yeah.
What do you do next? What are your next steps to set yourself up for success? So I'm fortunate enough to have been on both sides of this coin a few times now and, you know, have owned this business with my wife now for, geez, almost a decade. When the good stuff happens, what the first thing I like to do is I like to just sit with a pencil and paper and write down plans and goals. There's mm-hmm. something about that connection. You know, you don't have to type everything. And again, this is just me speaking to my own personality type. Maybe the elder millennial in me is coming out here that I like to still write stuff down. I want to write down my plans and goals. It really helps just kind of calm your brain of all of the potential and everything that, you know, you're thinking about with this new big client that's got you really fired up. Next step, analyze, you know, if you're fortunate enough, like we are, to have a team of people, that's next, is analyzing the team. What can we have them potentially do to help with this new big client? Where do we need to grow? Do we need to hire? Do we need to, you know, take some responsibilities away from one person and shift things around to make it so everything can be handled the right way? We're currently going through that process right now. We're doing some cross training on different things. So we're just getting the team ready for, something big that's coming around the corner. Managing expectations. I feel this is important even before you land the big fish. This is while you're, you know, in the attempting of landing the big fish, is making sure that the expectations of when, you know, you do sign them are managed. That way you're not stressed that, you know, you're offering something that you can't follow through on and that, you know, you can always set yourself up in a position to under promise and over deliver.
Right.
And that's really, really important to just set yourself off on the right foot. And now these next pieces of advice, I think, are ones that I've learned over time are more a little more important for yourself is you really have to respect your time as a business owner. Mm-hmm. It's very tempting when you have this new client to show them just how willing you are to do everything for them. And bend over backwards. And yes, absolutely, I'll have that done tomorrow morning. But realistically, you need to respect your time. And if your client is the right kind of client, they're going to respect you more for that.
Yeah.
And they're going to respect your product and your service more because you've established a real time frame that, yeah, I can't just whip this up and have it be, you know, ready for you overnight. This does take time. We've got to do our research. We have to do our due diligence. That's going to actually set you up for success more over time because you've managed that expectation, but also you haven't cheapened your product. Lastly, you know, just act like you've been here before.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. You know, when you're in the room with people that you feel like you don't belong in the room, don't let them know that. Act like you belong. This is even funny. So I'm very, you know, anxious sometimes to reply to an email right away. And sometimes I just leave it and wait 15 minutes and press send.
Yeah.
Just these little subtle things. So
I've done that. I must admit, I've done that too. Just wait. Right. Oh, that's too quick of a response.
Right. Yeah. You know, and this is real talk here. You know, you don't want to seem desperate, even though in your heart, you're like, I really need this or, you know, whatever position you're in, you know, it could be your first big deal client and, you know, your mortgage is relying on it. And there's so much happening. You can't let them know. You can't let them see you sweat. And all of that is just going to go towards your overall success with that client. I'd love to throw this back to you and hear your thoughts.
Yeah. You know, bringing on a big client, I think you hit it immediately with setting expectations. And that's true with any client, big or small, and sometimes even more so with the small clients, because with the big clients, they have the budget. Quite often, they know what they're getting into. They may have some experience buying your product or service in some way and are willing to continue because they see the value. So sometimes the bigger clients, sometimes, not always, are easier when they have experience and know what to expect. And if you can, again, over deliver on that expectation, that'll be a great relationship versus a smaller client who may have, you know, big client expectations, but, you know, small client startup budget. And so you really need to, you know, weigh those things. But to your point of just really planning it out, don't just go in and, you know, just hope it all works out. You have some time. Take that time to step back and really look at one, those expectations you think that you promised. How are you going to go through that process of really delivering it? Do you need to hire a part-time person, a full-time person, as you said, cross-train? Do you need to have maybe a virtual assistant or somebody who can take on some areas that maybe you are not fully expert, but maybe a part of this project? You need to look for that talent and give yourself that time and let the client know that this is the time frame I need to make sure we're heading in the right direction, because I want you to have a great experience.
Are there any resources that you've used for finding virtual assistants and stuff in that world?
Mostly, they've been referral. I mean, okay. Obviously there are a lot of places online that you can go. Some are better than others, that I do know, because just talking with my fellow peers, you say, yeah, this one, not so good, that, and I wish I could right off the top of my head tell you which they are. I don't want to miss, you know, say, hey, this great one is bad and this bad one's good. So for the most part, I've depended upon referrals, just because, you know, it's nice when you know that somebody's had experience with that person. It's not as much of a blind situation. So
Yeah. For years, being someone who's hired people, I'll take a friend of a friend all day over an unknown. Because, you know, they're vouching for them. So,
yeah.
All right. Throwing back your way. So if no one agrees on a marketing decision, what do we do?
So, you know, sometimes it's just you, but sometimes there's a few of you. Sometimes it's you and the client. Obviously, it just depends. But you're trying to grow a company, and maybe you have a partner and or a few partners and or team members, and everybody has their own ideas. You know, what should we do? And really, this is a very simple setup and answer, because we live in a time where you can test. Testing everything is such a great way to go. And you and I were in the marketing world, you in the social, me in the Google side. And a lot of times I'll have clients will say, I really think this is what we need to do to grow based on my experience. And maybe it does work in certain types of marketing, but not necessarily for what I'm doing. And I know from experience that it may not go, but I can easily say, let's test it. And so that the days of, here's the thing, there was a time where you have a group of people and the right answer was the compromise. Mm-hmm. And that compromise led to probably average and not that of exciting of a message or a brand or approach or anything, where now you can take some of those extreme ideas, as long as it's, you know, comfortable with the brand identity and where you want to be, and try them and see if people latch on to these interesting new approaches without breaking the bank or without tanking your company. So again, it's about testing. And we have a great luxury today because of this digital world to test things out, even for the print advertising because print advertising can be really expensive and it's a little more permanent. So if you have a headline or a concept or even photo ideas or imagery ideas, you can test them, as you know, within social media to see which ones people click on more before you commit to the bigger projects. So I think if you just take the time and have a plan on how you're going to test things, especially when nobody agrees, all is not lost.
Yeah, we're able to conduct a permanent social experiment pretty much with every ad that we run. It's great through, you know, specifically through Meta and Ads Manager. I mean, any campaign that we're running, we can simultaneously be running multiple forms of copy and multiple forms of graphic. Mm-hmm. And it's constantly delivering them, and it's varying the delivery based on the social experiment of who's responding with it best.
Yeah.
So, like you said, instead of having to find a compromise, which might be a watered down version of the message, you can put up the four or five different messages and then flat out at the end of the day say, hey, message B worked the best. You know, that's it's pretty cool to be able to have that information without making the huge commitment. Like you said, with print media, you know, you've got to print up X number of postcards or newspapers or whatever, you know, the form is before you're able to learn, where with digital, you can just click a button, turn it on and off.
Very good. Hey, cool. So I have some listener insight. So I'm going to be asking you a few questions here, Brian, see how well you know our listeners. I'm going to start off with an easy one. Where are most of our listeners from?
I'm going to go with Sheboygan.
I'm going a little bigger than that. Let's stick with a country.
Okay. All right, let's go United States.
You got it.
All right.
Start off with a win. That's often a good way to go. Start with a win. Okay. Where is the number two country?
Canada.
No. Ooh. Good guess.
Okay.
Going a little bit across the ocean.
One more
guess.
All right. We're going to go, let's go England.
Ireland.
Oh, I love
Ireland
it.
Ireland is number two for us.
All right. A little luck with us. Great.
Okay. Here's one that you... When I ask you this question, the first thing that you think of that is not the correct answer is probably the correct answer. What is the most shared and successful show based on the Spotify metrics?
I'm going to go our 500th episode with Robert Bauer.
No, but it is a guest.
Our Andres one?
Yes.
Nice.
Very absolutely. Our first guest, I believe, was he not?
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Last one. What is the number one type of podcast our listeners like to listen to?
I'm going to say business development.
That's number two.
Oh, okay. Photography.
Nope.
See, I thought we were riding your coattails.
No. You'll never get it.
No. Yeah, yeah.
You'll never get it. Number three is education okay. Stuff. Fair. Number one, true crime.
What? Okay, I'll take it. Well, hey, you know what? True crime podcasts are so big. And
It is.
Their listenership. maybe we'll start throwing in a mystery marketing.
There we go. Yeah, yeah. Who killed that ad?
Talking about some newer formats here in the new year. So we're you know, we'll maybe switch it up a little bit. We'll give our true crime fans something to something to listen for.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, and we do have some things that we're not going to share anything right now. Should we share, just for the sake of it, that we're going to have a couple weeks off coming up? So we're going to have another show, one or two shows, and then we'll take the last 2 weeks off of the year, and then we'll kick it with some new stuff and a few new approaches and probably new ways to see and hear the show. So anyway.
And we've got some really good guests too lined up already.
Oh, that's right.
We do. In February, we're trying to do a guest a month. So we've got January, February lined up. Please, anybody, you know, listening in, podcast bookers, anyone in that world, you know, send us your one sheets. We're excited to hear who you've got for us.
Yeah, very good. Hey, and thank you to everyone who's been listening to the show from the United States to Ireland and other parts of the world, of course. And hey, let us know where you are from. You can head on over to creativeentrepreneurshow.com and you can connect with us there. We'll talk to you next time.
Well, in Ireland, I know you can't see, but I'm raising my glass and saying cilantro.